Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to What Women Want with Amy and Ed. Hello, and welcome to the show, where I and some great comedians look at the misadventures, misunderstandings, and misogyny involved in being a woman. I always make sure every guest knows that the show is a judgment-free zone where you can share experiences of misunderstandings, of misogyny, and reveal any misadventures. I can and should then reveal that I recently, when swimming, may or may not have raced a lady who came up alongside me by speeding up as we got close to the edge, of course. I was silently elated to get to the poolside before her, but I was then immediately devastated by her social honesty when she said, as she joined a panting me at the side, "You beat me." And by saying it out loud, in that moment, of course, she won. We're now at the end of season one, and so we're taking a little summer break over August as we travel to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. Saturdays and Sundays at midday, pleasance.com for tickets. Guests announced so far include Rose Matafeo, Phoebe Robinson, Kiri Pratchett McLean, Nish, Phil Wang, and more. But we'll be back in September with season two. As a massive thank you to end season one, here is a little experimental treat of a bonus episode recorded in a studio. So no live audience to laugh along with. You'll have to provide your own laughter track. With two absolute dreamboats, Sarah Barron and Tessa Coates. We're talking how to start. Hello, and welcome to What Women Want. I'm Amy Annette, and I'm here with...
Sarah Barron.
And...
Tessa Coates.
Oh, lovely. Thank you for participating in that roll call so nicely.
Oh.
Thank you for coming to What Women Want. How are you both today?
So good, and so excited to be here. I've always wanted to be on What Women Want.
You have done one.
That is what I want.
I have done one.
So did it happen?
Yeah.
No.
I have done a few, actually.
Yeah, true.
But that is what I want always.
Nice. You always to be on What Women Want. It's a day in July that we're recording this. Can I say that?
You can.
And it's just a sunny, summery day, which is my biggest gripe with living in the United Kingdom. And I love it here, but there's not a proper summer, what I would define as a proper summer. There's never a click when you're like, I'm going to sweat every day now for 3 months.
Oh.
And so today feels like a day where I'm just going to sweat and it's going to be summer and I'm going to be present in that day.
I love that.
Wow.
And also I think what a beautiful way to start the show with a real sense from the listeners that they're listening to three sweaty ladies.
Three sweaty ladies.
That's what I want in the summertime.
Well, the theme today is What Women Want is to start.
Yes.
So let's begin. As you know, normally it's a live show. This is one of the first times we're trying it in the studio
without audience.
I encourage the people at home, provide your own laughter track.
Imagine if everyone thought it was live and they were just like, we audience today.
Wow, we're not funny. Sarah and Tessa were not
hated
funny.
Them. No. So much love in the room.
So much.
Take that H word out of here.
Yeah.
So the theme today is What Women Want is to start. And so like the live show, the sort of structure will be essentially the same. We'll each take a minute to, not even a minute, a few seconds, 30 seconds, a minute, I don't know you, to say what you feel you heard in your head and your heart when the topic was What Women Want is to start. I'll go first just to give a sense of my vibe, and then I've got some questions for you.
Great.
Amazing.
Guys, we'll be out and about in London town.
In the sunshine. It's a sunny day today.
I'll be sweating with the best of them outside in a minute. So when I heard that the topic was What Women Want is to start, I was surprised. I was like, who wrote that? Smashing idea. And I really don't want this to become like,
you know, my absolute guilt pleasure is reading late at night the articles which are titled things like 6 unusual habits of the highly successful person.
Yes.
Which is like, did you know Einstein never slept at all?
Yes.
Right.
And you're like, sleep has been holding me back.
Yeah, he sat in a chair for 10 minutes.
He sat in a chair for 10 minutes.
And that was enough for him.
That was enough for him, guys. His power was in his hair. And I don't want it to be that, because I think that is almost like the worst aspects of where feminism is going, which is like using feminism like as a life hack to like get more money at work, right, or like get what you want. It's not a proper like, you know, structural critique of the world. Anyway, basically, lazy is a big word for me. Lazy is a big word for me. I think it's my big internalized word. It's the word I use to sort of knock myself on the head when I feel like I'm not working hard enough. I'm like, well, of course, you're lazy. And I do think, I'm going to say that, am I feeling that way because I have like ingested the capitalist like blue pill? And I'm like, I'm deep in the capitalist matrix.
Right.
And like, there's nothing I can do that is enough, because it makes much more sense for the system for us to feel like we're the failures rather than to look outside us and say, oh, no, society is failing me. So you say, so it's a lean in, the Sheryl Sandberg model, which is all about women leaning in more, like taking space at the table. Really positive, really great. But then there's an aspect of that, which is like, are you telling women that if they were just a bit more confident, structural inequality would fall away? Mm-hmm. And that, in fact, it is their fault for not being more zhuzhy at the table that things aren't going well for them, rather than, like, it's not set up for them. So I want to investigate that with you guys. But I think, for me, I do wonder sometimes if I have, like, set up a feminism, which is just everything that I want to do, wrapped up in a bow, which makes me feel like I'm right on. Like, I want to eat bread. I do it for feminism. Shaving my legs takes quite a long time. I do it for feminism. You know, like, so I don't want to also be like, my privileges, like, I do want to take some ownership for what's going on as well. I don't want it just to be like, if only the society was more pro-women, I would probably be more successful. You know, I don't want it on both sides of the coin, I'm trying to sort of see, find my place in the world. Mm-hmm. And I think what I hope one of the themes today will be about is like, almost like to begin, is that everyone's scariest bit.
Right.
You know, you've both have done stand-up, you do writing, you moved to this country, Sarah. You moved to America for a bit, Tessa. Like, you've both done things that people would say are brave and are scary. And I'm sure that you don't call yourselves brave in that way. Who self-refers as brave?
I mean, an American would do it.
Oh, an American would, yes, of course.
I won't today.
That's so true.
I'm so brave.
So brave for this.
So brave.
This coffee, lukewarm.
Yeah.
So brave of me.
Brave
to drink
of
it.
Me.
That's interesting. Yeah, so I'd love to talk about that too. But in essence, I think I'd love to know a bit about your everyday lives and how you specifically get started, and also then how you feel like as performers, as women, as a mother, you start with anything. Like, what are the politics behind your decisions? Because I think there's so much of our everyday which sort of parlays to the bigger world, and I'd love to know, what's up with you guys? I have to say, the one nice thing about having cans and being inside is I do feel like I'm play acting as Fraser Crane.
Oh, yeah.
And
you are
both Ross.
I was projecting that onto you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It's Zach who needs to be Ross behind the glass giving us late special signals.
True. Yes, brother Zach is Ross.
Yeah.
You guys are
Niles.
Niles.
Martin, I guess.
I've never seen a full episode
what?
Of Fraser. I know. It's one of those big black cultural holes in my life.
In which case, you can be Daphne.
Okay. Great.
Interesting. That's a small gag
small
for the slam. Listeners. Because
because she's the one British one?
Yeah.
Okay. See, I knew enough to understand.
Yeah, you got it.
All right.
Yeah.
There.
Hey, back yourself.
Yeah.
You can join in.
I can join in.
So I would love to know about your motivations, how you start in the morning, but also like how you feel like when you come to new projects, how do you motivate yourself to start? And then sort of in a bigger picture, as women, do you feel like there are obstacles you have to come across, maybe as professional women in comedy or just women every day? Do you come up against things and you have to sort of deal with them in a certain way that might be interesting for us to hear about? And should we start with Tessa?
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Thank you so much. There's, I mean, so much.
Definitely. Thank you. Wow. I'm going to begin with something that I've been thinking about a lot recently, and I just want to touch on your lean in, Sheryl Sandberg, about all the instructions are like, speak up, make sure you're Well, quite.
Thank you.
Speak up. Make sure your voice is heard when you go into the room so that men aren't intimidated by the sound of your high lady voice. Be very confident. You're thinking about, you know, say, are these the pencils when you when you walk in? I think all of those instructions are a sort of how to get ahead in a man's world space. And I think increasingly we're moving in this direction that's like, oh, maybe we don't, those don't have to be the instructions. Maybe we can be like, oh, maybe women can, maybe women have got their own thing going on. I recently, at my grandma's, me, my mom, and my grandma had to move an extremely cumbersome table that involved a lot of physics to work out how to maneuver it.
Yeah.
And it was make, we laughed, we're all very much on the same wavelength as three people, but we also were coming to it in a way that I was so aware that if my dad or my granddad had been there, they'd have had a plan. We'd have all been like, no, stop laughing. Eyes on me. We're moving this. You pick up that end. Whereas we were just sort of working it out quite slow, much slower than a man would have done it. But we did get there. Right. And without anybody having to shout. And we were really proud of ourselves. And I felt like, oh, I think we've sort of, in this whole conversation, we've managed about like, you know, the leaning in, the starting, the confidence thing. We've managed to be like, oh, women have got their whole own thing going on that rather than trying to ignore and be like, I'll pretend to be this, you know, maybe we can tap into in a different sort of way. I just think move things with your grandma more. That's what I'm saying. But to answer your question about how do I start, I would also resonate with being extremely lazy and I think it's something that probably everybody feels. And I remember in like Lena Dunham's book, she talks about how incredibly lazy she is. Mm. And, you know, you read that and you think, good Lord, mate, like you've got a feature film, an HBO show, two books. Like it's very hard for anybody to be like, to believe you when you say that. And yet I believe that you believe you to be lazy, Amy, but I also know that you have a hit podcast and a great job and work extremely hard and do...
Don't make me cry.
Okay. Hundreds of things. And so I know that it's both possible to the outside world to appear wildly productive and to internally be like, but I'm the laziest girl in town. Mm. You know, I have so many work to do, and instead I can easily watch 5 hours of Love Island and drink alone, you know, totally, and be very content and trick myself into the idea that the brain needs like lazy time in order to be creative and stuff. And I think on how I start anything, always I've been driven, I like sort of wait until I just can't not do it, basically.
You find that stressful?
Yeah. It like, in other words, sort of like you, this is a more complimentary way of saying it, which I can say because I'm not you, so I can compliment
for
you.
For sure.
But like, it's like a work well under pressure, you need a deadline, like that.
Oh yeah, kind of so it's a combination of both working very well under pressure and also lacking the incentive to begin without the deadline.
Right.
Which is a terrible trait, and I must get out of it. But also, you know, when I first started doing stand-up, it's because it like physically felt like I had to do this thing now. Like I was, it was like, it would become, it was really dominating everything I was thinking about, and I stopped being able to go and enjoy anyone else's comedy or, you know, because I was like, oh, I want to do it, you know? Whereas now I'm totally content, you know, I don't have any of those feelings anymore because I have this area that I'm in control of in my life.
No, I'm so interested in that. And I would love to come back to it.
Please.
I find I'm also motivated by either other people's deadlines or other people's, not success, but like doing the thing I want to do. When you heard that the topic was how to start, how did that make you feel?
I hoped it would, I feel like I have some good starting anecdotes, Amy. So I hope I have something to say about that. Like, I think, Tessa, when you were just talking about, like, you just, like, that you start something because you know you have to. Like, I had done stand-up when I was 22, and I did it for 6 months, and it was just unmanageable. It was so terrible, and so, when I was bad at it. And I stopped, and it was, like, such a joyous thing. But then it was, like, this cancer inside me for 13 years before I started again at 35, which is a weird age to start stand-up
Tell me what you mean by the word cancer.
What I mean is, like when I first started dating my husband, who is British, which is why I moved here, I came to visit in August, and he was like, oh, would you want to go up to Edinburgh? Like, the Fringe Festival is going on. I was like, I can't do that.
Right.
Because it was like all the people, it was like this thing, or I couldn't, like on the very random occasion I would go to like a comedy club in New York. It wasn't a pleasant experience for me because like the idea of like standing out in the back of the club and like the comics looking at their watches before they get, was like so what I thought was the coolest thing and I couldn't do it.
So why did you stop?
It was so unpleasant, and I couldn't...
The scene or your feelings?
My feelings. Mm. And the scene, you know, we're talking 2003 in New York City. No. I mean, that was straight up like, I got a woman on the bill.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
People, you know, that kind
people
of...
People are wearing Von Dutch hats.
Yeah, it's just a different time.
It was the low-rise jeans.
It was all... Yes, course. The low-rise jeans, of course.
It was a difficult time for us all.
Yeah. It was a trying time.
Oy.
And I just, I couldn't get whatever it was out. Like, I had an idea, but there was, and then I sort of started writing some stuff, and I was like, oh, if I just wrote some stuff and didn't have to, like, what if you could just sort of, like, sit around and write some stuff in the day and then go wait tables at night and you didn't have to get on stage? Oh,
but the thing, the checking the watches and the...
All the cool stuff.
That was not enough for you to be a bomb. Over the crappy bits?
No, because I knew I hated – it was so hard to be one of the bad ones.
Yeah. Right, okay.
Like, that's the thing with stand-up. That it's like there are people who get up and they're good at it and people who get up and are not good. And the people who are not good either don't understand that they're bad or they understand that they're bad and don't know how to fix it or they're bad and they know how to fix it. And I knew I was bad and I didn't know how to fix it.
Yeah.
And I was like, we're out.
There's that great quote, and I'm going to annoy myself by not knowing the person who wrote it. I will put it in the footnotes of the episode.
Yes.
Which is like, don't let your taste get in the way of your success, which is that when you start something, do it because you have, you know, you like a thing. So like you love writing, you love reading. So that's why you start writing. But then obviously your skill level is not going to be up to the level of the things you love because you read amazing books and you read amazing writers.
Yeah, okay.
You don't let your taste stop you from getting to that point. Like, you will always be shit at the beginning.
Yeah.
And don't let your internal taste, which is the reason that you started doing a thing that you love, stop you.
Yes, except it was also this thing, like, I didn't feel any progress.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, but that's tough.
And it was just miserable.
So you said you had good start anecdotes. So when you were 35...
You're like, Sarah, so could you say something that's...
No, because I'm listening to this, I'm like, but you are not... You are someone who I think has started lots of interesting
and
things.
And you obviously did work out how to make it... That you were bad and you worked out how to make it good.
Ish, but I think there was something about, like, at 35, I just went... Like, I was excited to do the, you know, I booked myself in at a couple open mics and I did the first one and it was fine. You know, it went well and it went terribly sort of all at the same time. And it was like, I knew I had another one booked in like 4 days. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, right, that thing didn't work. But maybe if I boom, it'll work. Like, it was just like something had sort of shifted.
Do you start, because you said 4 days later you had another one booked in and I'm aware that you... prodigiously book stuff in and you sort of administrate yourself into doing lots of gigs.
Yeah.
And you sort of set yourself up for success, I guess, by doing that. Is that something that you've always done?
Well, this is when you guys are like, the laziness thing is so, so interesting. Because I think I am in some ways the, like so not lazy, but that's like any of that stuff just stems from a fear of being like fundamentally feeling super lazy. And I think like I'm real good at the admin.
Yeah.
I will be there early. I'll book the thing. You know, I will be the A+ student all the time. But it's because of like thinking I'm stupid or something.
But that's so interesting because you're so clearly not stupid.
No, but I am a little bit stupid about there are just these certain things, like, so in like moments of high marital drama, right, like we are fighting, the shit is coming out. I know what my husband feels is that he's with a baby.
Sure.
He said that. But I mean, it was a fair point based on the art. You know, he's like, I feel like I'm married to a fucking baby. Because I was like, I don't know. Mom and dad used to do that for me. I like a fucking baby. And the self-loathing of that incompetence is so crushing that the only thing I know how to do is like book myself in to do 5 gigs this week to compensate for the self-loathing that comes from parents who sorted a lot of shit out for me or something like that, I think. So it's like I've got a real, like when you were talking about like, oh, my you didn't use the word high functioning, that's my word, but your parents who were very hardworking.
Yeah.
Like mine were as well, but like they're super high functioners. And both my brother and I are real hard workers and super low functional.
Wow.
Like my brother, that my brother does it as well is really helpful because it feels less gendered. Mm. Like his wife has to do everything for them.
And it's because your parents were so high functioning that they incorporated your needs into their everyday.
I think so. It's like if we do any travel, my husband has to sort everything.
But I find that so interesting, and I agree it's interesting to think your brother has a long gender line. It's like I have this, which is maybe something about starting, which is that there's an amazing comedian called Anna Crilly, who is in Anna and Katie, the sketch group, and she had this Instagram post where she said, people ask me how I do it. She's a mother, she's got a few kids, blah, blah, blah. And she goes, I never look under here. And then it was a picture of under her kitchen cabinets where the, like, you know, like when it's built in and there's like a tiny, like, sort of bit at the bottom
white
that hides the bottom. Like a
wood.
Sort of a thin piece of cardboard / wood that would hide what's underneath. Anyway, it had fallen down and you could just see there was like dust bunnies everywhere. And she was like, I don't look under here. And I was like, interesting. That is the only way. Like, you have to choose a few things.
Yeah.
And your children and your career. Mm-hmm. Have you chosen? I assume. I mean, I took a lot from this Instagram post.
Yeah,
like,
but you gotta do it.
I was like, I truly know the woman, and I have never met her. This is so intense of me to say. I think about it a lot because to start, I definitely, when I'm like, I've got to get going, got to do things, I will allow myself the indulgence of thinking that some sort of domestic task is as important as a creating task. Like, I'm always impressed when people are able to do the thing. Like, they know that there's one thing to do, and they start that.
Right.
I totally allow myself the indulgence sometimes of being like, well, this domestic task needs doing. And I don't do that in a sort of, I don't think I do it in like a sort of 1950s housewife, like, it's just as important. Like, I know it's not. I do it
it's
in
avoidance.
A sort of martyred way. No, no.
Oh.
It's like an emotional labor dark hole in me where I am like, I shall fix it. Well, of course, no one else will. You know,
it's not
pretty. It's like sometimes to avoid starting, I think I totally allow myself to sort of indulge in, like, and I say this as a privileged person, right? Like, no, like, I have no baby. I have no real dependents. Like, if I don't clean the kitchen, it's not really going to affect anyone apart from myself.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm not introducing a child into unsanitary environments by not doing this stuff. So obviously there are some women listening to this who'd be like, I would love to just be like, oh, I guess I'll clean the kitchen today. You know, like as if it was like a sweet indulgence rather than like a thing you have to do all the time. But I do think I allow myself to sort of sit in pointless things. Like, I've got to be, I don't know. I'm finding it hard to be eloquent about it because I think what I basically do is instead of starting the thing that I want, the thing that I think I need, I'll allow myself to sort of sit in a sort of an emotional labor, martyrdom, indulgence zone where I just do the things that society thinks are good.
And do you think that the starting avoidance is about, like, the phrase that just came into my head, which is not the right one, but it's something about, like, putting your money where your mouth is, or the way that we make ourselves vulnerable. If you're sort of like, what could be if I wrote that book that I want to, wrote the novel that I think is in me, or really tried stand-up and didn't, and fucking committed to, like, that sort of stuff. Do you think it's about not wanting to make yourself vulnerable in that way?
I'm sure that's part of it, like fear of failure, that if you never start it, you can never be
right.
bad at
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I think as well, I do wonder as well, there's like a sort of feminist element to it, which is maybe more like something you'd recognize if you worked in an office, which is that if you put yourself out there, then you're a target in some ways.
Right.
Like, and when a man, maybe when a sort of cishet white guy puts himself out there, everyone's like, as expected. Mm-hmm. You know, when they don't put themselves out there, they're like, what's wrong with him? You know, like,
right.
There's a sort of easy... I think I often talk about on the show, like, taking the path that's well-trodden is obviously so much easier than, like, forging your own path across the field of our brain.
Of course.
Or right. Society. Mm-hmm. Tessa, you don't live in London. You understand fields?
Certainly. Yeah. Love a good field analogy.
Do you feel like when you sort of... that your career has taken you off a sort of well-trodden path and you're in, like... you're trying to, like, make your own path in this sort of terrifying field of society's needs and wants. How does that make you feel?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Gosh. Gosh. I don't know. I guess I to put some politics in it for the moment, I follow Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez.
AOC.
AOC. And I'd just like to say I've been there.
Fanciest way I've ever heard her name said.
Yeah.
Cortez.
Is that not
Cortez.
It?
Cortez.
Oh, you said it right. You just said it in your beautiful RP accent.
I've never heard it said aloud, so I didn't know.
I thought it was great, and I say that as an American.
No, you nailed
it. Sorry, for 15 years. You were great.
Yes.
You were perfect. Go on.
I'm sorry. I shouldn't have shamed you. Shame.
Shame. Shame.
Shame.
I want to say that I've been following her since before, you know, before she even made it into the Senate.
Oh, so
I mean, there from the very beginning.
Yes.
But I see in so much of her work, like, she sometimes posts things, you know, she's incredible on Instagram, and I can't recommend her enough, but she sometimes posts things about, like, people who so-and-so had to walk, so X had to walk, so Y could run. Mm. You know, there's a lot of that.
Right,
and so I think when I, not that I feel anyway I'm doing anything important, but anytime I do feel like treading a different path through the field, you know, you feel like, well, maybe I'm just making it easier for somebody else to come behind me.
Mm.
And that sort of feels exciting in its own way.
Yeah.
And I think it's certainly, I think the first time I heard the idea that, like, if there wasn't a space for you at the table, you had to build your own table, I remember being absolutely exhausted by the idea.
Mm.
But now that I'm probably halfway through my table and it, like, looks like a table,
mm,
and
right,
people can come and at least sit near me at it. It's not fully formed and it hasn't got three legs yet, but it looks like a table. Now I'm like, oh, yeah, obviously this is the better choice. But at the beginning of that process, and the same way of beginning anything, it feels like so exhaustingly monumental. You're like, ugh, no.
Yeah.
And I guess the whole of life is just realizing that there's sort of no, there's never going to be a peak to this mountain, even though every time you're like, oh, in a minute, then that's the horizon. Then I'll be able to stand on that thing and, like, look down upon my great achievements. And then you'll be like, oh, there's another hill.
Right, right.
And you just realize it's going to be that forever.
Do you deal well with failure?
Yes. I think.
Interesting.
I don't know. It took me a long time to get out of it. We went to a very highly functioning, very academic girls' school that everyone was. A lot of people were the children of were scholars and the children of academics. It was in Oxford, and we weren't one of the very. There were three extremely posh ones that you basically just paid your money and you didn't have to be very clever. You didn't have to pass an entrance exam to go. Right. And they were extremely posh boarding schools. And we were just a day school where everyone was quite, wasn't that rich, but was quite bonkers and very clever. That would be my description of our school. And therefore it had this ethos that was like, it's A star or bust. Like, this is what you achieve. And everybody bought into that idea. And we had this idea that was basically like, better no homework than some bad homework. So if you hadn't done your homework and you couldn't do it quick enough, you know, you'd try and finish on that. If it wasn't good enough, you just didn't hand it in. You took the thing of being like, I'll take a zero. Wow. Rather than take a lesser thing that I am capable of.
That is such a bad life lesson.
It's terrible. I mean, obviously, wow. no one was actually standing at the front of class and saying that was what you should do.
No, yeah. Of course.
But that was what we all privately and quietly ingested as absolutely the better way. Like, better to have better a zero than, you know, than
a B.
Than a B, because you didn't want to ever hand in and to put a a showing example into the mix. My mum, as a child, briefly lived with a family who showed Working Hunter ponies. And you, of extremely unrelatable content here, but you go around the outside of the circle with your pony, and then they pull you in one by one. So you're first, the winner is pulled in first to stand in the line. So therefore, you are pulled in one by one.
Oh,
it's like X Factor, but
very much so.
Brutal.
So you pull in,
to the
and
villa.
You that's the winner. She, as a child, lived with this family who, if you weren't pulled in first, you left the ring. So if you never didn't
Jesus.
Place.
Yikes.
So there was no, you know, and like showing is the dumbest. There's no athleticism to it.
You just, literally just show the pony.
You just brush a pony and then you walk it around. Like, it's so silly. But so in Working Hunter, sometimes you do some more impressive stuff. But like, that was their ethos, was like, if you don't place, you leave.
Wow.
So therefore your track record is only 100%.
Right.
You only ever win, or you only ever come second or whatever. Okay. And that, I think, was a similar thing to what my school was like. Was like, you, because you knew you were capable of better. So when you know you're not very good, you're just like, oh, whatever, I'll do it. But if you know you're capable of something better, to hand in something substandard was such a hard thing. And then as an adult, my whole adult life has basically been about dislearning that lesson.
Yeah.
And dislearning, of course, and also failing any of the education I had, was taking that lesson away and realizing that, like, obviously it's better to hand in your bad homework. Like, obviously just get the stuff done and make some better homework next time and learn from it. But don't, this track record of zeros will help no one. Like, just do your work. And so I'm much, much better at failure than I am.
That is, I mean, what a life lesson.
Wow.
That is so interesting. It really reminds me of, like, some conversations around, like, modern feminism being too, like, I was part of a book called I Call Myself a Feminist, still in print, I believe. Mm-hmm. And it was lots of different articles by different people. And one of the articles was titled, We Should Be Able to Fail Too. So it's like, feminism shouldn't be, of course we should have equal rights. Look at Angela Merkel. Mm-hmm. Like, it shouldn't be, look at the best of us. It should be like, we just deserve equal rights.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't need to show you how that women doctors can save lives just as well as men's.
Right.
It's like,
right.
Woman can do a podcast just as well as this man. Like, it's the most banal things and the most brilliant things. It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. It should just be equal. And it really, it similarly sort of helped me think about how I have internalized some versions of feminism too, which is, I did a talk at a school. Thank you. For free. For free, of course. And far away from my house.
Oh, I had to commute.
I did. All the way to Tooting.
Nice.
Anyway, and it was great. And there was this, like, much younger girl than was the age limit I had been told was going to be there. Anyway, she said, I'm really good at throwing and catching.
Oh.
Which, and I was like,
brilliant.
Great.
Fab, because that is also one of my top skills. my surprising skills, I think.
Can anyway, you throw?
Yeah.
Wow. You're athletic. This is what we've learned.
Secretly
athletic. What I've learned.
In every podcast, I like to get one
little brag out.
Little brag in.
I can catch,
but
I can't throw.
I find throwing.
So therefore, I'm trapped with the ball.
Sure. You're trapped with the ball. Great catch.
I have to run it to you.
But do you ever do the throw when you really amp up and you really ramp up and then you let go too late and it hits the floor?
Yeah, of course.
Oh,
calling.
This is so weird that you both know that you can or can't do. I have no idea how well I throw
my
a catch.
My dad is from Canada, as is my mum.
It's
and
a Canadian thing.
My dad didn't get any boys, so my summers were spent in the field.
There we go.
Throwing and back and forth with my dad.
My summers were spent in Canada with my 13 cousins, all boys apart from me and two others. So 10 boys. Desperately trying to flatten my boobs and catch a ball.
Yeah.
Desperate. But anyway, briefly, in this thing, the girl said, I'm really good at catching and throwing. We were all like, well done, clap, clap, clap. And she said, but I've started to be teased by this boy because he says that, girls shouldn't be good at catching and throwing. So then we were like, okay, so we dealt with that. And she was like, yeah. And then she was like, no, that's not really my problem because I understand he's an idiot. And I was like, you have 7. But
wow.
She said, my problem is now that he said that, I feel, and I'm paraphrasing her here, the weight of womanhood on my shoulder.
Right, right, right.
Anytime I think I'm going to drop the ball. Like, anytime a catch is coming in, I think it's going to hit the ground. I think, well, I've screwed women forever because this boy is right. Like, I shouldn't be good and I am not good and all this stuff. And I was like, there's a version of feminism which is like, you will let down everyone, all women everywhere, if you are not constantly achieving and constantly at the top of your game.
Yes. And I think
that's a problem.
All the women in the World Cup went in with that.
Yeah.
That, like, not only was like, here they were to have a good, nice, fun game and try and win. There was like the invisible scrutiny that was like, every time they did well, they were like, oh, nothing. There was like par.
Yeah.
But anytime they did badly, it was going to have this like, well, of course they can't. They're women.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and then any woman standing up on a bill that, in a comedy bill that was showing the woman, you know, she knows that she's going up there with the weight of like, women aren't funny. Whereas like every white man has just been allowed to be crap without anyone saying men aren't funny. Like, I think I really feel for that 7-year-old.
So it feels like as we come towards the end of our time.
Certainly.
I love that we've ended talking about the American women's football team. Like, I'm fully obsessed with Megan Rapinoe. Like, the way that she accepts compliments.
Oh, my God.
Oh, I've been listening to her going, we're not going to the fucking White House. Maybe 40 to 50 times a day.
I've been listening to her going, I deserve this. I deserve this. And she's, like, dancing with all her... I was like, maybe I deserve it.
Is that what she's saying? I deserve this?
At
in
one
that
point,
dance when she's on that... When they're all seated on those chairs?
Yeah, and then there's one, when they're on stage.
Yeah, and she's dancing.
And she's going, I deserve this. It's so great. It's also, it's almost the point of this whole talk. It's like, what women want is to start. It's like, we're all looking for permission, right? Like, we're always looking for, I remember I was in a bad job, and I was like, why won't my mother or boyfriend tell me to leave? Like, I had that actual thought.
Yes.
And then I was like, maybe I should tell myself to leave.
Yes,
you know, we're constantly waiting for permission for things.
Yes.
And then you see someone like Megan Rapinoe be like, I deserve this. And you're like, God, you did not wait for permission.
Yeah.
No.
And if your thing that you're waiting for is either that you see someone ahead of you, like Megan Rapinoe, that you're like, shit, if she, like, I should aspire to that. Or you see someone totally crap trying to overtake you in the swimming lane. And you're like, shit, I can swim faster or I can do this thing. And so either you're running in front of somebody or you're running towards you know, someone ahead of you.
Well, your table analogy, really, I enjoyed it a lot.
Thank you.
Because it was so visual for a podcast medium. Thank
you. Oh, yes, it was super visual,
it
Tessa.
It was great.
Very visual. It was.
It wasn't it?
Yeah, because I was
see
like,
it.
I remember you saying half a table and I'm really fixated on your half
and
table.
And I can't wait.
In the midst of
I would
finishing.
Love all podcast listeners to write in and tell me what kind of wood they saw. For me, it was a gleaming maple.
Oh.
Oh, mine wasn't that nice.
Okay, that's okay.
Mine was
that's
like,
okay.
We're sort of sat at like, unfinished.
Yeah.
Because you're building it. You're working on
well,
the
Well, my
table.
Hope is that at the end, my table, and there's space for lots of people at it.
When it's finished, a mahogany. A beautiful.
And not only that, it's got an inlay of a map, like a sort of.
Stop it.
Yeah, yes.
Like very Game of Thrones.
Yeah, very Game of Thrones, military tactician table.
Well, please do write in and let me know what kind of wood you saw when
Tessa's
Tessa evoked
table.
That visual
oh my
imagery
God,
in your brain.
Your own podcast is just called Tessa's Table and we all meet at your table.
I would love that, but no, there's enough podcast.
No, there's
thank you so much, Sarah Barron, Tessa Coates.
Thank
I really
you,
enjoyed
Amina.
This.
Thank you so much.
If you had any
it.
Sort of words of wisdom for listeners, as I think often people think of comedians as being brave, as like they have done the ultimate scary thing and got on stage in front of people. You did start. What kind of top tip, one sort of bon mot would you give to anyone listening?
God, I mean, I think it is about taking whatever the task is and sort of breaking it down to like a 1 foot in front of the other approach. Mm. So what I wanna write a novel or what, like then tomorrow, it's going to be tomorrow.
Yeah.
Tomorrow, you have to write 200 words. That's all. It's one double-spaced page.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I want to quit my job or whatever. Then tomorrow, you're going to go on to, you know, like what is the tiniest step in the right direction that you can
That's great.
Do?
Yeah. I feel like I convened you all here quite early in the morning in Old Street just for you to tell me that.
Oh.
I need to hear that myself.
Do you need to start something?
I think that is my great shame.
What is it? You're waiting to start, Amy.
I want to start, Amy.
Life.
In which
Amy.
Case, you need to. Life is not enough. You need to know your goal.
I know.
Crystallize it in your mind. You don't have to share it with anyone.
No.
And you have to be like, what is the smallest thing? My very first. Also, I have in my drawer at home an A3. Who doesn't love an A3 piece of paper? In which, during a very low point in my life where I didn't have a house or a job and I was living at my friend, sleeping in my friend Lucy's bed while she went to work every day. And I made this A3 of all the things I wanted to achieve. And some of them were literally like, build a bee hotel and like make this like little apple juice labels that I'd wanted to do for it, like stupid things. But there was also do a one woman show was on there and like all of this big stuff. And now it's maybe four years old now, this paper, and I find it occasionally. And I look at like how many things I've actually managed to cross off. From like writing them down and how they felt monumental at the time. And now I'm like, oh, hey, I did them.
Yeah. So write them down, break them down.
I think it's like candid admission of goal.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Tell like someone else.
Yeah. Or it's like be very honest, because I just think there's so much judgment and weight attached to like what any of us want, whether it's like something to do with a family or a boyfriend or like, you know, I not quite as much now, I just turned 40, but a few years ago, like at 35, I knew a bunch of women where it's like really all they want is a boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
It is the thing they want. But that feels so fucking humiliating to be like, I just want a man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So being
that you
honest.
Can't say it. And so it's, and that's a different thing. It's like, how do you start to find a man? You know, that's right. Like a whole whatever. But just like candid admission of what you want.
Mm-hmm. That feels like.
That's hard for people too, I think.
An amazing place to end this show, which is called What Women Want.
Yes.
It's all about being
what
honest
you
about
want
what you
and
want.
What do you
say
want?
What you want.
Yeah. And also knowing that what you want might not be what other people want, and that's okay. And feminism is like a wide house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wide umbrella.
Something about a
wide
church.
Ship.
Broad church.
Broad church.
Feminism is the hit TV show Broad Church.
Yes,
so
ma'am.
Tune in, enjoy Olivia Colman, and then do whatever you like in life. Thank you so much, Sarah Barron-Tessa-Coates. It's
thank
been
you so
such
much.
A pleasure.
What a beautiful way to start the morning.
Thank you.
I enjoyed this so much. And also, as always, we could talk for 4 more hours.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, that is. I'm furious that we have to leave the studio, but
we're
my brother Zachary is tapping on the
Roz
window.
Roz is tapping on the window.
Roz.
Saying we have to go.
Yeah. Roz, go to one of your unsuitable men.
Go. Is that your?
No, I freaked out about doing a Frasier
start.
Impression.
I commit.
I think I'm better at Niles. Is that good?
I think it's, I'm listening.
Oh, really good. Oh, and see, know your
good
strengths.
Good night, Seattle.
Yeah.
Good night, Seattle. Keep listening. I've lost it.
Back yourself.
I don't think I've watched enough Frasier. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
So, have we figured out what women want? Maybe. But the only thing I do know from season 1, 100%, is that all this woman wanted was for some nice tweets from people telling me that they nodded along as they listened to the show. Thanks to everyone for all your support so far. Thanks to Shola Eleje, and thanks to producer extraordinaire Zach Annett, who recorded, edited, and pizzazzed this entire season. Music is by The Artisans by Jamendo Publishing. Now, I know you know, but whoa mama, I gotta tell you, we are going to Edinburgh, baby. We will be at the Pleasance for 6 dates only, Saturdays and Sundays, throughout August. Please head to the Pleasance website to get your tickets. I would really love to see you there, and please let me know if the podcast is what brought you. I'd love to shake your hand and hold it for just a little bit too long to say thanks. See you there. Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.